Welcome to the Revenue Marketing Report, the podcast powered by CaliberMind for marketers looking to get into leadership. I'm your host, Kamala Thompson, and today I'm once again joined by one of my favorite guests, Doug Bell. Doug!
Kamala?
How's it going?
Good. It's good to be back. I'm supposed to talk about myself now, right?
Yeah, please.
Okay. I am a fractional CMO with an organization called Chief Outsiders. I've had the incredible privilege of having a client called CaliberMind, which is our sponsor for this event. I had also the great privilege of following the amazing work by Kamala as leader in marketing. So I stand on her shoulders, and I'm excited to be joining you and talking about that today.
And this topic is bound to get spicy. I am so excited. It's our favorite. Why does finance view marketing as a cost center and not a revenue generator? Go.
Okay, this could be the longest or shortest episode in the RMR series ever. Let's see if we can make it a short episode. Ready?
Go.
Marketers struggle to draw a line between marketing spend and bookings.
Boom.
And that is typically, yeah, it's typically why CFOs see us marketers as a cost center, because we're struggling to make the case that what we're doing turns into revenue. People know, I mean, Campbell, they know that we contribute, but it's really that direct line. And that's, you know, that's really the holy grail in many ways, being able to associate spend with results.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're looking for this dollar in, dollar out equation for each channel. And as you and I know, each tactic takes time. And we're dealing in millions of transactions or interactions with humans that eventually come out into a few sales. And it's like you said, making the correlation is really hard. Well, that was today's episode of the revenue.
But there's more.
Yes. But wait. Now, I would posit there's a few things marketers could do a bit better to get a little more trust with the finance folks. But have you seen things in your career that haven't or have worked well? We love both sides of those examples.
You know, full disclosure, Kamala, I think it's something I've struggled with in my career. I think that it's a rare marketer, maybe unless you're in the B2C side of the house, where I think you've got more precision and maybe a little bit shorter sort of sales cycle to be able to attach to. Maybe it's about, you know, e-commerce and justifying sort of e-commerce marketing dollars. So it's a little bit easier. But I struggled in my career to make that association. But I will tell you that my first and most favorite tactic that has worked really well is, even if it's a rudimentary model, get some sort of attribution model in place and begin having a really basic way of tracking your spend against those channels. But I think something that's really underlying here ultimately is it's not so much what works and what doesn't with CFOs. It's whether or not we can prove that we're actually spending and whether that's actually driving revenue. But to singularly focus on that is a mistake. And I think what ends up happening is we do a poor job, exactly as you're speaking to, Campbell. We do a really poor job of explaining the complexity of, as you said, all the millions of data points and the role that different channels have in engaging buyers, convincing buyers to have a conversation, bring them into a sales cycle. Different channels have different roles across the funnel. And so I think the mistake we have is to say, I promise this many results from channels that, frankly, in the day aren't meant to produce.
Right, right. And I can think of several channels advertising that are really good at driving things like awareness and getting more engagement, but it takes ages to see those pay off. So a lot of people don't even believe in them. And I think that's a bit of a mistake, but we could debate on that. The other thing I want to throw out there that you could feel free to disagree with is a lot of founders who've been around for a while and CEOs who've been around for a while have really relied on the sales first growth model, where you hire people who have a Rolodex. And for those of you who are young, that's like a list of contacts in your phone that you can sell to reliably. whether or not those people are happy with what marketing is doing can also influence the conversation. And it's simply just easier to get along when the numbers are moving up and to the right.
Enough credit to go around.
Yeah, credit. That's a scary word. That's triggering.
Well, so let's okay. So let's call a couple things out here. Organizations who struggle to move from founder-led sales to sales-led sales, that's a common tripping point. But I think you're calling out something that's really important, especially for marketers and future marketing leaders who are starting their careers in startups where the founder is there and probably drove the first 5 or 10 customers, which is their perception of the sales cycle is driven by their hands-on experience. And your job, in many ways, is to help them understand how that's going to transition to a sales-led motion and then how marketing is going to support that motion. So that's an easy place to get tripped up. But I have to say, typically the founders don't get that piece, don't get their next round. So hopefully there aren't that many landmines out there that you're going to step on when it comes to the sales-led and founder-led models.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point and spot on. From, we've worked with different kinds of founders, and I've been with founders who wanted to be king, as Frawley put it, and then founders who are truly, they want to get rich, but they want everybody to get rich. And by that I mean they're really focused on what's best for the company and what the market is saying, as opposed to here's what I've tangibly touched and felt and feel is what we should always do.
They're
And that's
building a
hard.
model. Yeah, they're
Yeah.
building a model, whatever the motivation is for the model to work. And so they're able to step outside that there's fairly low ego. It's entirely about whether or not the model's efficient. And I feel like we're lucky enough in SaaS to have lots and lots and lots of founders and CEOs that think that way. You have always had the corner cases, but those corner cases typically don't last either.
So recently, I worked with OpenPrize on a survey of operations professionals, and it was really interesting to me that marketing operations professionals, one of their lowest priorities was financial modeling. Hear me out. It does seem like something that would be on the edge. However, if you think of budget season, you really need to understand and learn how top down and bottoms up approaches. Doug, I know you've gone through budgeting and it's easy to make mistakes, and mistakes are kind of okay. We kind of expect them. However, I'm not saying you made a mistake. I've made mistakes. Let's just clarify. We've all made mistakes. Okay, we're in it together. Sweet. But understanding how the finance team thinks about the business and spend, I would say that it's kind of risky that skill is such a low priority, don't you think?
I do, but I think it gets back to your original point, that being that marketing is seen as a cost center. And I'm going to oversimplify this because you know me, Kamala. That's what I want to do with everything. But let me oversimplify this. And that is to say, if marketing is viewed as a cost center, that's usually typically a failure, not of marketing. It's a failure in marketing leadership. And
Yeah.
that's because the marketing leadership is, and I'm sorry, and by the way, I've been in this cycle too. I've been that marketing leader who created a situation where marketing was seen as a cost center. So I think we all, at some point in our careers, spend some time in that place, and it's awful. Okay, so this is pot kettle. But at the same time, what ends up happening is if you don't have, and especially in today's SaaS world, folks, if you don't have a well thought through multi-channel model, this gets back to what we talked about before, the nuance of what we're doing, and not all spend equals direct bookings or direct pipeline. But if you don't have a really solid multi-channel model that's not static, that's flexible, you can play with it, you're just always going to be reacting. And
Yeah.
one of our managing partners here at Chief Outsiders, a brilliant woman named Karen Hayward, wrote a whole book on this called Random Acts of Marketing. And so I feel like those are kissing cousins, random acts of marketing, and marketing being perceived as a cost center. And I also think, Kamala, this is easily remedied. And I don't actually think it's a conversation, as much as I love Calendar Minds products and as much as I love and believe in attribution. I think that's sort of the third step. I feel like the first step is, Do you have a marketing leader who can articulate a multi-channel plan that's going to drive revenue? And when it works, show it works. And by the way, guess what, folks? Sometimes it doesn't work, but you flex the model. That's when you start getting away from cost center and more into the situation where marketing is seen as an engine for growth or revenue.
Yeah. Yep. I 100% agree. I'm thinking back in my career at all the times. The leaders who did well, they were wrong at times, and they could admit it really quickly, and they could explain why. And they could explain what they were going to do differently. And that's ultimately what any CFO, CEO is looking for, is you have a solid enough understanding of the baseline numbers to understand what works when, and you can diagnose when it went wrong, so it's not something you keep repeating.
Can I give a live use case with our yes. favorite brand, Calibermind? And I really like what you're saying about being able to admit when a part of the model isn't working, right? And I won't get into the architecture of the model because I don't think that's germane, but I would say there is a point in the fall, and I know, folks, we all went through this collectively, but there was a series of updates that were pushed out by Google, which ultimately are about increasing the quality of content, right? And that's, for the most part, that's really what they're looking for, or to increase the number of PPC SERPs for them. That's another conversation. But that update happened, and it caught us on our back foot at Calibermind. And Gamble, you've done some amazing content marketing and content strategy and SEO work, but it caught us on our back foot. And, you know, I have to say, that part of our formula, because of that release, it completely changed the way we looked at our multi-channel model for the first quarter. We had to adapt really quickly. And I had to have this really fun conversation going to what used to be our mutual boss and go, I goofed up. SEO is not working the way it should. And by the way, this is your highest ROI channel, and it's going to take this much time to recover. So here's what I'm doing. And so again, that also, I think, you know, I love that you called that out, because I think that is your coin of the realm when it comes to being credible, driving a model that produces revenue, and ultimately not being thought of as a cost.
Yep. Well, perfect segue into our next topic, Doug. We're going to be talking about the holy grail of marketers, ROI. Can't wait.
I thought it was TikTok. No, it's ROI. Check.
Listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to the Revenue Marketing Report. Please tell two friends, subscribe, download, whatever you can helps. And for those of you looking for more great content like this, check out calibermind.com.